So this next talk is by Gregers Bauer Petersen, who will talk about the magic of distributed objects.
Or as the title says, distributed objects and magic, which is basically the same. Hello. I'm going to talk about this kind of probably slightly exotic topic, because it's something which I've spent about 10 years of my life on. My background is anthropology. I'm an anthropologist. I've done research in the world of open source software and property relations and ownership models and so forth for a long time. At some point, you always end up in that situation that you have a life which has to work, which means you have to be able to pay bills and support your kids and stuff like that. And that made me choose to leave academia and become a sysadmin instead of. You know, salary every month, super. I still have this interest as an anthropologist on the existence of magic and distributed objects. And I will get into what I actually mean with this and how this is actually related to free software and the production of free software, and in particular the production of free software within a project known as OpenWRT. For a number of years, I was a member of the OpenWRT core team. To be honest, I'm not much of a coder. I'm actually probably the best in terms of technical things, is that I'm really good at breaking stuff. And it's a challenge for me to fix it again. But I try. So I did a lot of other things. And one of the things that interested me was actually, how do I understand the model of ownership and the relationships around property in this context? But to start that, the title is Distributed Objects and Magic, and see if this changes. Yes. I have come up with a short definition of magic and, of course, of sorcery. And sorcery is also important. And magic is basically about enchanting people, convincing them without it being obvious to them that they should do something else, that they should experience certain things, or they should act in specific ways. Whereas sorcery is the dark art. It's about manipulation and exploitation. As an anthropologist, magic takes up a lot of space, or used to take up a lot of space, in the work, in the research, because that was what the primitive people were all about: magic and strange ways of organizing their lives, and cosmology in very strange ways. And this actually led me to think that, is there still magic in our world, or is there not? And how does magic find expressions today? And this brought me to the concept of distributed objects, which is a concept which is basically taken from an anthropological discussion of art objects. That you have certain objects. It could be a painting. It could be a figure. It could be, as I started out with, a canoe made by a tribe in Papua New Guinea. And it's not just a canoe, it's much more. And these objects, when you look at them, they contain qualities and intent of people. And with the intention that these objects should bring on or bring with them the power and intent of the producer or the owner. And so that it should give the people who, the person who meet or engage with a certain object, a certain experience, or make them act in specific ways. And typically distributed objects are placed in circulation. They have to be visible. And the intent is to enchant people. And now I'm kind of getting over to magic. And And it's about that these objects are intended to enchant people and have them act and understand the world in a specific way, to give them experiences and to inspire them. And this brings to me to free software and ownership, which was, as I said, the beginning of all of this. And there's a basic question: why do people give away source code? That was when I started my project in the early 2000s. It was like the big thing. It's really difficult to understand why. Why are these people doing all this work and just giving it away for free? Is it about, in classical anthropological terms, gift giving, reciprocity? Is it about community social relations? Or is it more about like an economic sense that if I give something into the big cooking pot, there will be more for me because everybody else is also putting stuff in there? Is it just about license requirement to be in compliance with licensing, open source licensing, or is it a mystery? And there wasn't any clear-cut understanding of this. Why are people doing it? And I was wondering about this. And then something really nice happened. This one came along. somebody really fucked up at Linksys. So they ended up having to be forced to release the GPL source code. And that was in October 2003 that it really took off. And suddenly everyone was like into, hey, let's hack this thing. Let's do something about it. Let's find out what we can do with it. And that brought the OpenWRT project along. It came out of this, that suddenly there was source code available. Taking it apart and putting it back again in strange ways. And the Linksys WRT54G was like the thing to do that with at that point in time. And this brought me to OpenWRT as a project, as an organization, as an org. And I started looking at ownership and property relations there. Then, okay, they're producing something. They actually make themselves. Like, there wasn't any OpenWRT before, so they started making it by cooperating and by themselves, putting code together, writing code. And they do it through work and play. And that was kind of like, what do they actually make? Okay, they write code, but what does that actually mean? Because what is all of this about? And at some point I started looking at, okay, maybe it's about that they are manifesting their ownership through the creation of a territory, the project itself, the source code repository. They are expressing authority, like the right to control, specifically who has the rights to engage with this code, who has the rights to commit, and so forth. So that could be in a way of understanding by these notions of territory, authority, and rights, what is actually going on here. And what kind of really was like the breaking point here was, I don't know if you ever saw this one. It's the OpenWRT, the main developer, the MBM initiated the OpenWRT project. And he actually revokes the right to use the OpenWRT code from one specific company, Trent, which is actually one specific person, who broke the license requirements. And I was like, one point, what the fuck? This is not something that happens very often. I don't know if you've ever seen anybody revoke somebody's right to use a specific piece of source code. I think this is my only example of it. And it was very, very public. And what happened there was that This code is circulating. And the developers from the OpenWRT project, they place their code into circulation. They make it freely available. And they don't as such has any, they don't have any intent of creating relationships with everyone who is using this code. They don't expect that everyone will bring it back to them again. They kind of have a thing, okay, normally bits and pieces will kind of return somehow. There's a sense of that you have to kind of maintain the project, which again requires that you kind of attract developers. So this whole thing about circulation is both about placing your work publicly visible, and by that maintaining your territory, maintaining your authority over it by having your copyright names and comments in the source code itself, and also maintaining the project, maintaining the territory by being visible, but also by attracting and helping new developers make themselves. And this is about property relations, and free software is of course very much about licensing, and in that sense, with these property relations, then as an anthropologist, you know, there are lots of primitive people out there, and they are really primitive in Papua New Guinea, and they're really great because they have a different way of acting with and understanding what property and their relations are. They have a sense of multiple ownership, that it's not like an individual, like in a Western country, like in a capitalist understanding of ownership. It's about a group, a family, a tribe, a people who have the rights in certain ways to a given something, a given object, which could be a canoe, it could be a drum, it could be a shell necklace, but it's always something which is publicly visible, and it's in circulation. Like you have some very fantastic descriptions of one tribal group who built a canoe, and then they sail it to another village, like hundreds of miles away, and they lent the canoe to these people as a display. It's not about that they get something back, but they lend it, and this then you will see in some certain situations that this canoe is then lent onward to another tribe, and then over time it might get back to the original. But again, this is about display of that they had the kind of the territory to create this canoe, and they had their authority to do it, and they have the right to lend it on, like circulate this canoe in certain ways, as long as it is respected that everyone visibly knows that it belongs to a specific territory, a specific group of people. And in Papua New Guinea, they have a very strong stories and actions around situations where people steal other people's names. And stealing somebody's name would be saying, is very basically saying, this is my property. This song, this canoe belongs to me. That's a no-go. That's a reason for going to war. And they also have an expression where they talk about the use of hard words. And these hard words are said, this is how it is, which will typically be said, you are no longer a member of our community, our world. And then you don't exist as an individual. All your ties, all the entanglements that you were part of before, they've been cut. So that is effective, that's in result, it's about socially killing an individual. And that brings me back to this open WRT comment. This is hard words. The result was for this owner of this company, Sveasoft, he went bankrupt. He was held out as being an idiot, an individual you could not have social relationships with, because he did not respect the ownership of others. So what the OpenWRT project is doing is that they're expressing their ownership through free circulation, because it is a way of showing that they have a territory, they have authority, and they have rights. And if you want to be part of this, you have to acknowledge that this is the case. You have to circulate. You can do whatever with the code, but you have to circulate it with the intent of the project developers. So you, in this sense, the source code itself is a distributed object or a set of distributed objects, depending on how you look at it. And this object or these objects are embedded, entangled in the intentions of the OpenWRT developers. And by circulating it, by keeping it visible, and by having this authority and the expression of territory, they're able to reproduce ownership. It's done automatically. And it's done without that they have to have community ties or social relationships with the people who use the software. And in that way, for me, it became an image where this is about enchanting the users and the people who meet the source code into doing and following the intent of it, which is to manifest the ownership of the OpenWRT project and circulating it. And I think that was pretty much what I had to say. Very short, maybe a little bit complex, maybe confusing, never know. But what else? Talk to me.
Any questions?
You also gave the example of tribes or small communities who would expel people who misbehaved. What is different in the distributed world?
For me, distributed objects is simply, in this case, the OpenWRT has a source code repository. It's freely available. You can pull from it. You are not able to push unless one of the developers accept your commit. So that there you have, it's distributed, it's placed into circulation. You can pull copies, you can give these copies onwards to your friends or whoever. You can do with it what you want. So you know where the territory is, where you can collect the code. And what you are actually then pulling from the repository is objects. Do you understand that? And you pull them by following, accepting the authority of the OpenWRT developers and all the other developers who are upstream or downstream from them, who have committed code into their repository, by respecting that there are certain rules. You cannot hide, you cannot steal the name of the OpenWRT project. And that's an expression of authority. And then by having this authority and by having a territory, the OpenWRT developers can actually give you the right to commit under certain copies, under certain situations. In that sense, what you then are committing, you are committing back objects back. So you're bringing the circle back. the circulation. But and in terms of distributed objects, source code is for me just an example. It can be art objects that circulate. It can be, again, as I said, canoes, shell necklaces. Basically, what is circulating and what is distributed objects in a sense is, for me, typically something which has to be visible. If it's hidden, if it's only like traded through back channels, you kind of enter into something which is more sorcery. It gets, you know, dark and like something where you exploit stuff. And that was actually, for me, one of the important aspects of this announcement that the OpenWRT developers withdrew the right to access, was because the owner of Sveasoft stole their name. And that's unacceptable. And in that sense, I think what is for me in this context is it's in some ways it's difficult to directly compare art objects and source code. Because art objects is typically in a Western context something you buy and sell. So that you actually have something which moves from a singular ownership or a singular producer or manufacturer to a singular individual who owns that piece. That's again a problem within the world of art, the art world, because at the same time there's a lot of focus on displaying, but you have individuals who buy a certain painting at a auction and you never see it again. Which is then, in some ways, it's a problematic because it's also about then stealing something of your culture or the general culture. It survived. So for me, with the open source software, is that if you look at it in terms of the distribution that these objects are circulating as a way of manifesting ownership by reproducing who made this, who created this, who placed this into circulation, then for me at least, it makes more sense than looking at it as something you buy and sell and stuff like that. Mm. Was that enough of a explaining? Super. There's sound in it, but I don't know how it gets into it.
What?
Hello? Okay, great. So...
okay. Give me a minute.
I think if you speak up, I will repeat the question as okay. Good as I...
Maybe testing. Okay, so there's kind of a material benefit to the software being free. Is that part of the magic that you're talking about, or is it an entirely separate social phenomenon of this, the experience of having a territory and authority within the commons?
I think it's this. Your question about is it more or is it also about material properties that it's maybe a better product? I don't know if it always is something which is better. Yeah.
It's not that free software is always better. It's that for any given software, it would be better if it were free. And so there are advantages to free software, and if we want it to exist, we have to make it. Mm. Do you think that the way in which it's better is part of the social magic that you're talking about, or is it a separate kind of phenomenon?
I think I would definitely question the thing that open source software always is better. There's a lot of open source software which is really good, and then there's a lot of open source software which, from my personal point of view, is really crap. I think for me it's more about that you choose to make your work visible instead of hiding it, and you actually create the opportunity and the potential that it could engage and become a territory which would include rights and authority, or you could say it would be able to come alive for others than you. I'm not saying that, I'm in no way saying that you're wrong. It's just, I think it's different perspectives. And I think if something I could be, I'm a bit critical towards that free software, open source software always should be better. It's just about that you have two different ownership models here. You have a singular ownership model where you say that this is a singular individual or a corporation which owns this, and they have the right to hide it and explicitly decide how you can use this code. And then you have free and open source software, where anybody can use it because it's freely available. They can build it, they can rebuild it, they can take it apart, and they can audit it, and they can have other people audit it, and that's more specifically a multiple ownership model. There is more than one individual typically who has part in a specific piece of software. And the only way that you actually become aware of the existence of this piece of software that somebody has written is that it's made publicly available. It's placed into circulation. If it's not placed into circulation, it actually doesn't exist. And it doesn't have a life. And I think that's maybe, for me, that's the important part, that it potentially has a life. It's not, there, GitHub, tons of things of GitHub, like billions of codes of like lines of code. I don't know how much of that actually is used apart from maybe one or two individuals. Some of it is used a lot, but there's also millions and millions of lines of codes who doesn't have any life. And if you try to install it on anything, it just breaks. My experience. I'm old, you know. And there are some commercial stuff is actually not bad. Again, depending on your situation you're in. But again, I would at any point in time prefer something which is circulating, as my personal opinion.
I don't quite see what the magic is that so it's like
the magic
the creation is of it being alive or
the essential magic is about open source and free software is circulated with the intention of keeping it in circulation and with the intention that people do something with it. That's magic, in my understanding. You are somehow, you know, you stumble across this whatever on GitHub, and then you think, oh, great, I'm going to check this out. And then it works for you. And then you tell your friends about it. You know, post it on Reddit or wherever. Or you write a comment for the developer, or you push a fix, you know, of some kind, a patch to it, and it gets included. And for me, that's actually magic that you do that. Because it's not, it's again, my personal opinion is that, or experience is, it's not something you like think about a lot. You know what I mean? You just kind of do it. And when you do something, okay, who's telling you? Nobody's telling you. So maybe there's a magician there somewhere who's like, you know, put some special powder over this source code. And I think that's for me about this kind of that we are actually living in a world which is contains magic. It's about words, of course, and you know, enchantment, and that you can suddenly be in a situation where you thought, ooh, what happened there? I'd never seen things in that way, you know, and that can be a magic moment.
So you explained this in the beginning, I came a bit late, but magic, would you describe it as a magic object is an object that induces behavior in people by its existence and about the story, yeah, the sort of human understanding of that? Right, and then open source license piece of code is an object because it has license and standard. It induces a specific behavior. But does it also apply to any object in the world outside of these examples you've taken up today?
It can apply to any object, I would say. But again, I think it's something you talk about, you know, in branding and marketing and with, like, you know, stuff you buy. Why do you buy something specifically? You can say, okay, this is I want to present myself in specific ways by wearing North Face. You know, I've climbed that North Face. No. you might say, is that because that piece has magic, or is it because it's like a commercial product where you have learned somewhere that you have to wear that or buy that, or you're buying into as a consumer, you're buying into a certain expression or performance. And so it's easier in that sense to identify certain objects as being magic when they're made by individuals with the intent of having you to use it, having you to experience things, as art objects or as specific traditional cultural objects, which are tied into specific ways of understanding the world, which is different from commercial, consumer-based approach to the world. Yeah. Again, they're different in terms of that they express two different ownership models or models of ownership, a singular and a sense of a multiple or shared model.
Any more questions? Well, thank you very much for the talk.
Pleasure.